All righty, we will call the Senate Transportation Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:33 on Thursday, April 8th, 2021. Present today, we have Senator Keel, Senator Michicki, Vice Chair Schauer, and myself. Senator Myers is chair. That gives us a quorum. Staff committee today, we have Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records, Alec Banachek is our moderator, and of course, Michaela Anderson is my committee aide, keeping me straight. Oh, and Senator Bishop joining us. Quick reminder, of course, please silence your cell phones. So today, we're going to be going through amendments for Senate Bill 103, the Alaska Marine Highway System Operation and Planning Board. We've got Andy Mills and Rob Carpenter from DOT on board to answer any questions, as well as Rachel Witte from the Department of Law, if necessary. And with that, we'll go ahead and get moving on amendments here. So, we're starting with mine first. So, amendment number one, I will go ahead and move amendment one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Schauer.
Explanation.
So, amendment one, what we're doing here is basically we are defining long-term plan. And the other thing that we're doing is the bill initially was changing it so that the long-term plan needed to be updated every 3 years, and they pushed it back to every 5 years. The rationale behind that being that we don't want to fall into the planning-to-plan cycle and forget to, you know, sit back and actually examine to see if the plan is working. And then the other rationale with the is defining long-range plan is 30 years on the theory that with the ferry system, the largest pieces of it are the ferries themselves. And as we have discussed in here previously, we're expecting a 30 to 40 year lifespan when we buy a boat. So if we're going to buy a boat, we should probably have a plan as to how it fits into our operations. And we just wanted to make sure that was going to be the case. And then there's a small technical change in there as well, that the plan would need to, once the plans are created, then they would be transmitted to the Senate Secretary and the Chief Clerk of the House. More of a clarification than anything else. They were supposed to be transmitted to the legislature anyway. We're just being a little bit more technical about where they're going. So any discussion on this one?
I see.
Surprising. Senator Keel.
A question maybe for the department. Do their long-term plans match up for the rest of our infrastructure, the 30-year planning horizons or 20-year planning horizons?
Mr. Mills, I believe that's going to be a question for you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Through the chair, this is Andy Mills with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Yes, the 30 years actually does marry up with the existing timeline for the long-range transportation plan. So that 30 years is consistent.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Schauer.
I will remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any further objection? Seeing none, Amendment 1 passes. Oh, excuse me, that's A.12. All right. Moving on, Senator Schauer with Amendment 2, that's A.7.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
That's probably where this one will end up on purpose. It is a very large amendment for a reason. I have warned you, Mr. Chair, about this just so that we would have this as a point to have the discussion. You'll remember a week or two ago we had the discussion with the Department of Transportation, and the discussion was centered around whether it is time to move the ferry system out from under DOT and to create something that would almost be akin to quasi-public corporation like the Alaska Railroad, other entities, ASME, et cetera. And so I have a lot of documentation here. I won't belabor the discussion. The point of this is understanding that, you know, this really needs a separate bill because you're looking at a pretty complex thing, which makes the point by having a 53-page amendment, you know, that you just don't do unless you want to have this discussion. So I don't want to take a lot of time here with this, but I wanted to bring some highlight things. One of the questions that has come up as well, the cost associated. Well, guess what? We're already paying the cost. Department of Transportation estimates $48 million roughly in revenue and $59 million of, you know, basically state subsidy to it. So, you know, you're looking at $101 million already that we were planning to budget for. Looking at the year-over-year increase from the governor's budget, I have it right here, continuing to go back up now. It dropped from 19 to 20, and we're going back up again a little bit, not a lot. But the point is that when we look at the things I've discussed before that I brought up, you know, taking management and getting it to the board in a high-test CEO type that would have the ability and experience like we see in Ketchikan with the inter-island ferry system that has become very efficient, 70-30 as far as subsidies upside down compared to the state. You look at the hub-and-spoke model. We've made the points about why we don't fly, you know, airlines and cargo companies don't fly empty 747s to Huna because it doesn't make economic sense, why they don't do three flights a week to places like that. They do them once a week or every other week. You still need service. But you need service that is under contract where we're paying employees and running boats that are empty. We don't need to do that, and we're not very responsive. We're still operating, as we discussed, on a 1950s, 60s type of model. Ridership has been going down. Cars have been steady. You have the issue we brought up of subsidizing ferries that's in competition with cargo of civilian companies that we're not supposed to be doing. So there's a lot of issues here. You look at the Alaska class ferry, what happened with that, the fast ferry system, selling some of these boats pennies on the dollar, et cetera, long discussion, Mr. Chair, but you know, one of the things we looked at with this extra CARES money coming in, we're somewhere around 166-ish, plus or minus, million dollars, and you would, of course, require some costs. We're not the only one working on this. You have things in the hopper. There's things in the House as well with other members to look at potentially finally changing direction and doing something different. And putting the ferry system under control of a board that has the experience and ability to be responsive, reflexive, move us into the 21st century away from the old model so that we can look at doing things like the hub and spoke model and make this effective. Because I want to be clear on the record again, and Deputy Commissioner Carpenter, he knows this. There's nobody here saying we don't need a ferry. We absolutely need it. I made that point in 2019 in finance. You have to have a ferry system because there's communities that can't survive without it. You can't keep them alive with airplanes. I think the point is we want to be more responsive. You have a very large organization in DOT with multiple things it's responsible for, four different big areas. So I believe it's that time. And we've got ADA that is essentially an Alaskan bank we can use for things to get this done. The amount of money you would take is available now if we wanted to get this done. That's coming from the federal government we didn't have before. And so without going into the 53 pages, which I never had an intention to do, but we had to make the point of why you'd have a bill so we could talk about it, I believe it was important that we have this furthering discussion as we had with the deputy commissioner before about is it time? And there may be disagreement about whether the time is now, but I believe it is, that we need to do this now. We've continued on the path of the ferry that, you know, we're kind of the Titanic looking at an iceberg and it's hard to change direction. And we are sustaining a ferry system that we can't sustain, Mr. Chair. And I think most of us have acknowledged at least some level of that, that we need to do something different. I'm going to stop my diatribe there. I want to get this on the record. There may be other points or counters, and that's fine. But I do not intend to keep this amendment. I will pull it after discussion if there's any further, Mr. Chair, just so that we could have this. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Any further discussion? Senator Bishop?
Thank you. I want to continue on with the diatribe. From Senator Schauer and dovetail on and add to his comments and to say that, again, I'm a broken record. You got to go back to Governor Egan's 1964 transportation plan, and in that transportation plan was road-to-road connections to lower the mainline ferry runs, and we need to get back to building roads to lower the mainline ferry runs and build the road out of Juneau. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I'll touch on it. I love 53-page amendments and the brief discussion that's associated with them. But I'd like to see us get to that point. I think this board gets us to this point. And I think it'll support the fact that becoming a corporation is probably the right direction. If you look at the folks that make up the board, we're putting people with that expertise in place to make those decisions. So I think we will have a natural transgression toward, or progression, toward that result. And I appreciate you bringing it up. I think it's a good point. I hope to see us head in that direction with the results of this board.
May I have one follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Senator Schauer.
Thank you to both with the comments. And you may remember, I don't remember who all was here, but we had two different union representatives at the public testimony. Both of them agree when I asked the question, should we pull this out of DOT and move on, and they agreed that we should. It's time to do so. Now, we may not be there yet or able to. I get that. I'm trying to make a point of, I believe there's the acknowledgement that we have to do things differently and better. And this is certainly a step in that direction. I think we should do more, and that's okay, that we may or may not get there yet. But like I said, there are other efforts a part of this. This was about kind of setting the context of this as we talk about it. It's broader than this, so there's more to it. Anyways, so there is support even from those in the system that work there in the ferry system that told us here in this very committee that they believe it's time to do that. And there's some acknowledgement from even DOT itself that maybe we're getting towards that point. So, again, all good stuff, and we're moving in the right direction with it. I just hope we will continue down that path. So thanks to everybody for the discussion.
All right. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the senator is going to withdraw it, I won't get into the details of how he's put it together. But ultimately, it's the right course. We're going to spend, I think, a bunch of our conversation time on these other amendments, talking about how to give a tooth to an advisory board. And the department came in when they first presented the bill and told us that they wanted this board to have enough, I can't remember their word, enough oomph, mm-hmm. To make a difference. And we'll try some amendments here, and we'll talk about them that might give it a little bit oomph. But ultimately, an advisory board, the DOT is free to ignore anytime, all the time, however it likes. So this set up an authority, public corporation, that's the structure that will actually get us long-term planning, that will actually get us long-term investment decisions, that will actually get us half a step off of politics day to day. Devil's in the details, and if the amendment's not coming up, we won't spend time on the details, but the ultimate structure, that's where we ought to be going.
I would, Senator Keel, I would echo that there's a difference between direction and timing. This bill does take us in the correct direction. What Senator Schauer is bringing up, I believe, is also still the correct direction, but there is also timing, and if it takes a while to set up something complicated, there's also always the concept of a bridge, which at a minimum this bill gives us. So I do appreciate that. So seeing no further comment, Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chair, and I just will make one final one. They did say, if you remember as well in the public testimony, that often they give advice from the board, and it's been ignored over the years. I just think it's complimentary to what Senator Keel said. I withdraw amendment number 2.
All right. Amendment number 2 has been withdrawn. Pardon me, I'll take my notes. With that, moving on to Amendment 3. This is A.5. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment number 3.
And I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a basic workability amendment. an 11-member board is pretty unwieldy to be a real working group that digs in, gets the work, and puts out a work product. So this amendment would take us down from 11 members to 9. We would delete a couple of the public members in the largest categories, keeping some of the specific categories that the department brought forward. So our 3-member categories would go down to 2, and that's all it does. It's just a little bit leaner opportunity to get a few things done.
All right. Any further discussion on this one? Either Mr. Mills or Mr. Carpenter, I would be interested in hearing your comments on this, just based on the size of the board.
Through the chair, Bob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. I think we would be supportive of this. We've had discussions internally that 11 members is a lot of people to find, even that are can devote that much time and attention, and managing a large board of that size would obviously the more people you have, the more difficult it is to come to a consensus and move in a direction. So this is also the number that the reshaping work group had proposed, and I believe we'd support this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Any further discussion? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a problem with this. If we were doing public non-experienced members, you know, they're all public members, right? But removing the areas of expertise from 3 to 2 likely cuts out an area of expertise that's going to be needed by this board. And I see the same thing with business experience. I think that's problematic. I mean, what I support about this is you're bringing private sector people with specific expertise on specific in specific areas that are very important to the system, so that you have this wide spectrum of applicable experience that can make really good decisions that we've not had in the past. So getting that level of expertise in all those different areas for 2 members, I think, is going to be very difficult. If I could do a friendly amendment, I would leave the page 2, line 15 at 3, page 2, line 17 at 3, and simply reduce page 2, line 13 from 10 to, I'm sorry, that's the total, from 10 to 8, kind of doing this on the fly a little bit. I would not take the highly skilled individuals with the business and technical expertise that you need off of I would not reduce those 2 categories.
From Sarah Machicki, is that on page 2? Would that be under section 2A? It's A and B, correct? Those 3? 3 members with experience in marine operating maintenance vessel, and then the 3 members with business experience. Is that the 2 you're referring to?
Yes. Can we have a brief at ease?
Yep, brief at ease.
Also, a question, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor, because there's Amendment 5 coming up, which realigns board members too. And how's that going to affect this?
This
was to pass.
Yeah,
it would rechange that too, would it not?
Mr. Chairman, I did not do a concordance, so we could.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I did have to take them in order, yep, rather than I didn't do a single amendment for everything.
Okay. All right, Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, if the maker of this amendment would consider having this discussion during Amendment Number 5, which is probably a more significant amendment, it might be a more efficient way to operate if that member is in agreement with that method.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to work the committee the way you're interested in working the committee. We can do this as an amendment to Amendment 5. If you'd like.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Just on, to keep it clear, back to the original comments from Senator Machicki. I understand your point to the maker of the amendment. Had you thought about maybe, I mean, while I know what you're saying and I know what you're trying to do, but to his point, maybe somebody can't make a meeting, or maybe 2 people can't make a meeting. Is it, are you hard and fast on this? You know what I mean? So if we go to 3 to 2, we want to make sure we don't put us in a place to get from 3 to 1 in 2 of those scenarios. At least we could hopefully maintain 2 at all times in those two areas. I just bring that up for conversation.
Understood. Senator Keel, I believe we're going to end up going to a vote on this one, and I believe we're also talking about possibly addressing some of these concerns with Amendment 5 as well. So what is your interest with this one?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to do this. If it'd be more efficient to take care of this in conjunction with Amendment 5, I will withdraw this amendment for now.
Okay. All right. Seeing that, amendment 3 is withdrawn. Moving on then, amendment 4, Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 4.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
It's alpha.8, and this one is following discussion we had in the committee a few weeks ago about adding the two non-voting members from the legislature, one appointed by the President of the Senate, one appointed by the Speaker of the House. So we have the representation and that liaison between the bodies as we have recommendations, funding, other things that come up. So it seemed like everybody was pretty much in agreement that we would want to do that. So this is just an add.
All righty. Further discussion. So I'm looking at Amendment 4 here and contrasting it with Amendment 5. The primary difference here is that I'm seeing is, question is, are the members coming from the legislature going to be able to vote or not? And 4 being they will not vote, and 5 being they will. So, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, there's another critical distinction, which is if you're in Amendment 4, they are members of the legislature. And in Amendment 5, they would be presiding officers choosing public members, working members of the board.
Fair point. Let's see. Mr. Carpenter, I'm curious to hear your views on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rob Carpenter, DOT. I believe you guys are familiar with the Ledge legal memo that's going around, and our Department of Law has some comment on some separation of powers issues with appointment of board members being with the executive branch. And we have the Department of Law online to discuss it further. But as far as that issue, it's something we're willing to discuss further, but we're a little concerned about it from a legal perspective, and again, the separation of powers.
All right, Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, that's the reason it's very specific that they cannot vote. They are merely there as basically participants in the discussion to bring back, you know, information to the legislature. If they were a voting member, we would have that problem, when we are aware of that. For the deputy commissioner, that's why it's specific that they cannot vote.
Okay. Any further discussions?
If you want to get a legal, if they're there, I mean, yep. I'm happy to listen.
Let's go ahead and get to Ms. Rachel Witte on the phone. If you could comment on this amendment, please.
Through the chair, this is Rachel Witte, Chief Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Law. And there is some precedent for legislators serving on an executive branch advisory board or task force if they don't have an actual role in executing or administering the law. But there are attorney general opinions that are that agree with the Ledge legal opinion about not having legislators make appointments or having those members have voting powers.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Witte.
Mr.
Schauer, or Senator Schauer.
I have a memorandum here I could read for the record if you would like.
Go ahead.
To our office from Ledge Council from Legal. The fact that legislators serve on the board even as non-voting members may raise dual office holding and separation of powers issues. Alaska Constitution prohibits dual office holding and restricts a legislator from holding certain positions in state government during the legislator's term of office for a period of 1 year after the legislator's term expires. But if you go through the rest of this, then it would talk about the fact that it's the non-voting part of this that makes it clear. So I just want to be clear for the record that we did go through this and investigate it to make sure that we would not be broaching a constitutional issue with this, and we're pretty confident that this is clear. As long as it's passed, that they cannot vote. So, for what it's worth.
Understood. And as Ms. Witte mentioned, we have seen legislators on boards before as non-voting, and it does seem to me that it follows the standard procedure of the legislature exercising oversight powers, but not executive powers. So, in terms of being on the board but not voting. So, any further discussion on this one? Okay. Before we get going, okay. Let me take a brief Eddie's real quick. Okay. So, seeing no further discussion, I will withdraw my objection on 4. Seeing no further objection, Amendment 4 passes. Alrighty. Amendment number 5, that's A.6. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move Amendment 5.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. So, as we've discussed a little bit earlier on, Amendment 5, we wanted to talk about the size of the board. This does take a slightly different approach than the amendment we just passed, which put legislators in a non-voting capacity on the board. With Amendment 5 here, what we propose doing is having the presiding officers of the legislature appoint a couple of members of the board who then serve as voting members of the board. Again, as we talked about earlier, no legislators would serve on this board. It would remain a group free of legislator members. And there are I've just drawn a blank on the example. There's another board here in the state where we do this. The presiding officers choose members. We have a presiding officer here. I don't know if he's done that yet or not.
You might be thinking of the redistricting board, or is there something else?
I believe there's another one, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize. I don't have my don't have it in my notes handy. Here's the key reason. It's an advisory board. And every member serves at the pleasure of the governor. And that means our desired outcome, we've all talked about here, of getting long-term planning and long-term viewpoints, is really the board's no more stable than the deputy commissioner or the commissioner of transportation. Each new governor can come in, take office, thank everyone for their service, and appoint an all-new board, unless we do have another appointing authority. Since this is an advisory board, we would be within our bounds, since it doesn't have executive powers unto itself, for the legislature to have presiding officers appoint a couple of the members. And that way we have some folks who don't serve at the pleasure of the governor. They have stability, and the board has some membership that can outlast any given transition.
Any other comments? Well, I've got a couple of responses to that. One is that, as you mentioned, you can have a governor come in and change everybody out. Well, governors come in every 4 years. We have new presiding officers every 2 years. And so to me, it seems to me that if we're looking for stability, this brings us a step in the wrong direction. At the same time, one of the findings from the working group was that we are trying to remove politics a little bit from the marine highway system, and while anything that still involves the government is still going to have politics involved in some way, of course, by having people that are appointed by the presiding officers of the different bodies in addition to the governor interjects an extra level of politics into it that was not there originally, and it seems to me that we're thereby in both cases moving in the wrong direction, and that very much concerns me. Is there any further discussion on this amendment?
Just
Senator Keel.
To respond to those concerns, Mr. Chairman, you're right. We're never going to wring all the politics out of it. So the question becomes competing interests, working together toward a common goal, or everybody appointed by the same single individual? Which whipsaws you harder, and which gives you more opportunity for a less political work product? I think throughout our Constitution, throughout our justice system, what we have is the notion that competing interests and a single outcome ultimately gets you a work product more folks can live with, and probably one that's less likely to swing wildly administration to administration. So I think the approach is one that stabilizes, even though it is true that presiding officers can change. I think you have the potential to stabilize the overall board and give it a little more longevity in its membership.
Thank you. We do, of course, assume that our Senate president will be here for the next decade or so. But
he won't be.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schauer.
So how would this affect Amendment 4 that we passed? And, you know, from that one to this one, that's part of my question. So what would we have here, ultimately?
Senator Machicki.
Well, I mean, I don't think it does. You pass that amendment. I don't think it overrides it. It would change how the other seats are appointed.
I would
tend to agree with that.
With 11 who vote, yes.
Yeah.
I guess, okay, that's one question. Thank you. I just wanted clarification. Second one is we have given it both to the president to appoint as opposed to one to the president, one to the House. Would that change?
No, we've given two to the president of the Senate and two to the speaker of the House.
Oh, this is okay.
Yes.
So we only had one.
And then six from the governor. Senator Machicki?
So if this amendment number 5 passes, Mr. Chairman, we should clarify for the record that we do in fact intend to have a 13-member board with only two non-voting legislators and 11 others.
And will one be appointed by the House Speaker, one by the President, as Amendment 4 states, or does precedence on 5, which said they're both appointed by the Senate, President of the Senate shall appoint two members? So that's why I'm trying to get clarification between these.
So the difference between 4 and 5 is 4 is you're appointing two members of the legislature
mm-hmm.
as non-voting members. 5 gives you four public members with voting powers, two of which come from each House. So ultimately, you would end up with 6 coming from the legislature, 4 of which could vote, and 6 coming from the governor, all of which could vote.
Is that right?
Another way to put that, Mr. Chairman, might be Amendment 4 is passed. You got two legislators who don't vote.
Right.
Amendment 5 would take your 11 votes and say 4 of them are appointed by presiding officers. So you'd have 11 who vote and 2 who don't. Your 2 stay. They don't vote. Amendment 5 doesn't change that. It does change who appoints 4 of the 11 who vote.
I got you. That's what I'm trying to follow and get clarification. I did not catch that, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's why I was getting a bit confusing between those two.
No problem. Okay. Further discussion on this amendment. Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, I have a friendly amendment to Amendment Number 5, and we talked about this at an earlier meeting. I'd like to combine. This is the amendment, so I will get it out the best I can for the recorders. C would say two members who represent communities served by the Alaska Marine Highway System, one of which being a member who represents an Alaska Native organization. You would eliminate F, and the two other numbers would drop down one. So you would have you would only go to E. You would eliminate D. When we talked about it, we valued an Alaska Native participating, but they should have been an Alaska Native from a community served by the Alaska Marine Highway System.
All right, one second here. And Senator Keel.
Clarification, so the 10 public members become 9.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Machicki.
No. C would be two members of communities served by the Alaska Marine Highway System, one of which being an Alaska Native, someone who represents an Alaska Native organization.
So if I may, so we're you want to eliminate F. E stays, correct?
E and F stay. They would just be D and E.
D and move each one up one.
I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, okay. So we're not changing the total members.
D folds into C.
D folds into C only. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that. Okay. And Senator Keel?
Just so I'm clear, by folding D into C, one and one becomes two,
mm-hmm.
as described.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, but then we are deleting the position in F. That's one fewer.
No.
That remains.
We're just renumbering.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly amenable to that change.
Okay. So call that Amendment 1 to Amendment 5. Call that one passed, seeing no objection. And then we had been previously discussing and talked about bringing it up in this amendment, shrinking the board down from 10 public members to 8 public members. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we did discuss whether we talk about that in when we're doing Amendment 5. I have a sense that that's not going to be a productive use of our time. So let's not do that at this point.
Okay. All righty. Senator Machicki.
I have a question for the maker of Amendment Number 5, and this is just a kind of mechanical thing. So you have three entities appointing positions in, of course, the lettering is going to change because the F will go away in on page 2, section, or number 2 and 3. I'm asking about the mechanics so that people are not trying to appoint to the same positions.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this amendment lays out the order of the initial appointments so that, you know, and this one is a great comparison to the redistricting board, right? That lays out an order in which the appointments are made. In this case, we would lay out the order of the initial appointments, and then each of those seats, each appointing authority would replace when one of the seats they appointed becomes vacant for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Senator Machicki, you would go first, if that helps.
As is only fitting.
Thank you for that explanation, Senator Keel and Mr. Chairman.
All righty. All right. Is there further discussion on this amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Mills, yes.
I'm sorry, sir. I wanted, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to raise one of the other issues that we had Rachel Witte on the phone for to disentangle two legal questions. One, you had already addressed in a previous amendment about non-voting legislative members, and that was actually one completely sort of separate conversation. The other reason to have Ms. Witte on the phone was actually for an amendment along this that you're examining now. It has to do with separation of powers and the governor's constitutional authority for appointment. And in this case, we did have a concern to raise if you would entertain her describing that for you.
Yes, we will. Ms. Witte?
Yes, thank you, Chair Meyer. This is Rachel Witte, Chief Assistant Attorney General at the Department of Law. The Department of Law has relied on the doctrine of separation of powers in several opinions disapproving the legislature designating appointments to boards and commissions. The department's taken the position that the appointment authority is reserved to the governor, and this is distinct from actually naming in the statute that specific position in the legislature will hold that chair. This would be different. This would be giving the legislature the power to appoint a member, which the department has opined is reserved to the executive branch under the Constitution. So that's just, I guess, that's the legal opinion we would offer on that issue.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may also, earlier in the day, we did provide alleged legal, Andy Mills, Department of Transportation, did provide a alleged legal memo that was part of a discussion with House State Affairs on a related bill on this topic. Same issue.
Thank you. Senator Bishop?
Yes, while we got law on, I just got one quick question. Do these appointments have to be approved by a joint body of the legislature?
Ms. Witte?
You know, Normally, that's the way the appointments are, unless it's I don't know if there's anything specific in this bill that wouldn't have it done that way. But I mean, that's the typical, the traditional route. Sorry.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
You can go first, then.
Okay, Senator Keel.
We had a brief at ease, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, brief at ease. All right, back on the record. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. So two responses. One to Senator Bishop's question. I do not believe this is a legislatively confirmed board. This advisory board doesn't have power to make regulations or grant licenses, and so I don't believe we have the constitutional power to require them to confirm, to sit for confirmation. It'd be great if we did. I'd love that. I don't think we get to. and then the other would be the two examples I needed a lifeline on. The Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, the presiding officers appoint members, public members, voting public members to that, as well as the Alaska Minerals Commission. So those are two examples of boards that have existed for a very long time. They're within the executive branch, but some of the public members are appointed by the legislature.
Senator Schauer.
I did, and I had one mostly for legal, although I'm sure she doesn't want to answer this question. That's fine if she does not. When we're talking about the separation of powers issue, I find this fascinating because in the Constitution it says that the governor gets to do all of those appointments. It's under his authority to do so because they work at the will of the governor. However, we have an entire branch of our government in the judicial branch that half of that council, the judicial council, is appointed by a non-governmental body. It has not been challenged in court. It probably needs to be, but that is also a separation of powers issue where you have half of the judicial council appointed by the Alaska Bar Association in essence. So there are issues here that I find fascinating if we're going to talk about a broad spectrum of who has what power and where that goes, because that question has not been constitutionally challenged or answered yet. So I am not sure that it upholds or would hold through the scrutiny of what you're talking about when we know that we have an area where we actually do that currently. So something to consider.
Okay. Did you want to answer?
I don't think she wants to answer that, quite honestly.
Fair enough. All right. The other thing that that was brought up is that while it may be constitutional now, as Senator Keel mentioned, we do have some other amendments in here. That, as Senator Keel mentioned, as of right now, the board is strictly advisory, but we do have some other amendments in here that would be directing DOT to incorporate them more into the planning process, not only as advisory, but actually have to have certain portions of various plans approved by this board. And I do have to wonder if that changes the nature of the separation of powers issues.
Mr. Chairman, I did not ask legal for an opinion on that question. That's a fair one. I think that would bear some thought. I think it also bears thought about whether it makes it a potentially confirmable board.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mushicki.
This is your committee, but if you try to assess whether or not a future amendment passes and direct your entire meeting to, you get nowhere very quickly.
Fair point.
I think you have to pick a direction and vote, and if you have to change something later because they don't interact well, then that would be the proper way to go about it, I think.
Understood. Okay. Fair point. So just bringing up a point to think about as we move forward. Beyond that, is there any further discussion on Amendment 5? Okay, I will maintain my objection. Senator Keel, I'm assuming you are not withdrawing this one.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so Ms. Hemingway, if we could have a vote on this one.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
Senator Schauer.
Yes.
Senator Bishop.
Yes.
Senator Mushicki.
Yes.
Senator Chair Myers.
I was going to be the no. So with a vote of 4-1, Amendment 5 passes. Okay. Moving on, Amendment 6. Oh, this one's mine. So I will go ahead and move Amendment 6.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. It's A.11.
Oh, yep. Thank you. So, yes, A.11. So what we do with Amendment 6 here is we would change our terms from 3 years to 8 years. The issue, a little bit of what we just touched on with Amendment 5, is we're trying to remove politics from the process. And with most of the board appointed by the governor, we note that a three-year term, everybody will at some point come up, have their term end during a single governor's term. And so, again, if we're going to remove politics from the process a little bit more, we would want our board members to be able to outlast the governor a little bit. And therefore, the amendment proposes switching from 3 years to 8 as terms. Discussion. Senator Mushicki.
I appreciate the intent of the amendment, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if you would consider, if you think about how they're staggered, 8 years is forever in board service. It's a very, very, very long time. Would you consider, so if you think about how they're staggered, would you consider changing that 8 years to 4 years? That is something that I could support. And if you look at the way they're staggered, roughly half or less of the board members would change out with each governor's term. If they had two terms, it's kind of hard to plan for that. It doesn't happen very often in the state of Alaska. I can count it on less than one hand. I can count it on one hand. But 8 years is such a long time, I'm afraid that it might scare some individuals out of committing to that length of service.
I understood. Senator Bishop?
Senator Mushicki covered what I was going to say, especially the last part. The commitment, you might shrink the pool of what we're trying to attract here. That's just a comment.
Understood. Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We talked about this yesterday. We had the discussion, same concerns, but just I would offer, as we're looking at, there is another amendment next that actually has a different number. on it. Just if you are open to it, your call, of course. But that one goes, I believe, to not to skip ahead, but to five. So if we're looking at some kind of maybe change here, I could blend in the middle personally, because I do agree eight's a long time. But I understand the intent of what you're doing, and I agree with that. I just think that we may want to go a little less. So just a thought, you know, for what the next one looks at number wise, or, you know, some friendly amendment to this one. I would support that. Thank you.
Understood. Well, seeing as how I may not be on finance, but I can count, that's three. So, Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, I move a friendly amendment to amendment number six. And that would be to change the term of 8 years to 4 years. I still think five is long. Maybe we should have a discussion about that.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess technically I need to object to that one so we can discuss. Is that correct, Nancy? Okay. So I will, moving Amendment 1 to Amendment 6, I will object for purposes of discussion on that. See how far we get into the nesting. Senator Schauer.
So I'll ask the maker of the friendly amendment, if we look at the numbers, and I don't know how you would line this up on the board to make sure that you wouldn't have a political appointee aligned with a governor, is there, with, I haven't done the math, it looks like you may be doing it over there to figure out how that we'd stay unaligned so we would stay outside of that political, well, as much as you can, appointee. I just ask for an explanation if he's doing some math on it.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Schauer, I think it's a healthy mix at 4 years. I get the three-year thing, but if you look at the terms and the four-year, you will have folks that were there before the governor arrived, and you'll have folks that are remaining after the governor leaves. And I think that was kind of the intention of the amendment, if I understand it correctly.
Yes. Any further discussion? All right. Well, I will go ahead and remove my objection to Amendment 1. So Amendment 1 to Amendment 6, seeing no further objection, will pass. So we're down from 8 down to 4. Okay. So seeing that, Mr. Mills, I'd be interested in hearing the department's opinion on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is on the 3 years to 8 years?
We have switched from 8 down to 4.
From 8 to 4?
Yeah, so it'll be a 4-year term instead of a 3-year term.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think increasing the amount of time on the board, especially for the skill sets of individuals that we are looking for, I don't know that the department or the administration would express an issue with that. If we're looking for highly qualified individuals, a slightly longer term makes sense to retain that talent.
Understood. All right. Any further discussion? All right. Oh, brief eddies. Record. Okay, back on our record here. Point's been brought up that we will need to deal with the second portion of the amendment that deals with the initial staggering of the terms. So let's see, we would have to do, let's see, we got 10 members, we got 10, so 3.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have a...
So, Senator Machicki?
So your 1 through 4 would actually solve it. I see what they're saying on staggering the entire group, but mm-hmm. something to consider would be 2 members to serve a 1-year term, 2 members to serve a 2-year term, 2 members to, 6 members.
Right. We'd have to do 3 and 3 then.
Yeah, 4 there, that would cover it.
We do.
It's because your max is going to be a 4-year term, and then you would start reappointing.
Mm-hmm. So, hang on. So you're doing 2, 2, 6, 2. Is that correct? You're doing what?
That's too many.
Too many. So my suggestion would be to do 2, 2, 3, 3.
That's fine. Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
All right. So, quick amendment. We will amend sections. We will eliminate section or numbers 5, 6, 7, and 8, and we will change 1, 2, 3, and 4 to be 2 members, 2 members, 3 members, and 3 members.
Mr. Chairman, I move a clarifying amendment to amendment number, the friendly amendment on amendment number 6. Do you object for?
Okay, I will object for purposes of discussion. And
so if you remember, the friendly amendment changed the term of 8 years to 4 years.
Right.
And if you look at line 12, we will amend the 1 member in line 12 to 2, the 1 member in line 13 to 2, the 2 members in line 14 to 3, the 2 members in line 15 to 3, and we will remove lines 16 through 19.
No problems here, any brothers? Okay, remove my amendment so that amendment passes, or remove my objection so that amendment passes. Brings us back to Amendment 6 by itself. This is my amendment, so your objection, Senator Schauer.
I remove my objection.
Remove the objection. Seeing no further objections, Amendment 6 passes as amended. All righty. Moving on. Amendment 7, Senator Keel.
Withdraw Amendment 7, 8.2.
All right. Withdrawn. All right. Amendment 8. This is A.16. Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 8.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
This amendment would require the board to hold at least 1 meeting per year in the following regions of the state: Southeast, Kodiak, and Anchorage. This language is identical to the language from the Board of Fish, which has requirements to hold 5 meetings per year in 5 separate regions of the state. This would allow the public more access to the board for participation and input where appropriate. It would also engage the board members more by visiting communities that are reliant on the ferry service.
Is there any further discussion on this one?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schauer.
I have a question for the sponsor of the amendment, just generically, because we've done so much of what's been happening with COVID and all of the virtual work on the boards. Is that something that would have to be specifically annotated here to allow that to happen, as we did for the other one, I forget the number of the bill we just passed, to allow this to happen? Or is that something that would be broadly applied from another statutory area? And again, I go back to travel and people calling in and those types of things, as opposed to being required to show up in these regions?
That's a good question. I'm hoping by the time this board's seated, we won't be there.
I just feel we're in COVID forever, so I worry that if we do that, then it'd be tough to do. So just a question.
Yeah.
We also do occasionally have the, you know, things like earthquakes and things that happen in this state, too, that do occasionally cause problems.
Mr. Chair, I think it's just more broadly, are we allowed? I'm asking a generic question, too. Can they call in as opposed to having to travel these boards? Is that acceptable? I don't know. I just don't want us to.
You know, I don't know what the Board of Games protocol is right now, but I'm not even going to venture to say. The Department of Law's online. Let's ask them is if the Board of Games allowed to call in, okay. Or what's their do they know what the protocol is, or the department?
Okay. Ms. Whitty, question is Board of Game, Board of Fish, other boards that normally move around geographically, are they allowed to do remote meetings in lieu of?
Chairman Meyer, this is Rachel Whitty from the Department of Law. I would have to get back to you on that. I came prepared to address the simple issue about, but not simple, the narrow issue about separation of powers, and would want to confer with some others at the department that might better be able to address your question.
Understood. Senator Machicki?
So we are working on legislation that if we're in a position like this, they would have the ability to meet remotely, which can't speak for something that has not yet passed, but I think that process is in place. I think you're right that by the time this passes and these people are appointed, we likely will not be in a COVID situation, but if we get into something similar, I would assume that we could enact the same kind of thing that was enacted through emergency regulations for this event.
Understood. Senator Bishop?
To Senator Schauer's great question, the other thing I would say is I'd be curious to see what the board would come up with for a policy.
Thank you. Just a question. Yep. I'm good with that.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, I will go ahead and withdraw my objection on this amendment. Seeing no further, Amendment 8 passes.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Carpenter, almost gave you a promotion.
Thank you. Rob Carpenter, DOT. I was just having a thought on that last amendment that just passed. Could you add language that said simple as notwithstanding unmitigating circumstances or something like that?
I think, did you, Senator Machicki, you had a comment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we've made sure that our other boards and commissions could meet when unmitigated or unmitigating conditions arose. I think if you put it in at this point, someone may find a reason for defining their own reasons why they wouldn't move around.
I have an answer.
So,
read this, Mr.
Yeah, I think it's. Oh, yeah. Oh,
awesome. Senator Schauer,
Your staff there, Mr. Chair, if I may read briefly, it answers the question. I didn't catch it. Your staff is doing a great job here. Basically page 3, line 11, says right there under section 1965-240, meetings may be conducted by teleconference. So there you go. And I apologize for wasting.
All right,
time.
Then. Already taken care of. Okay. Moving on. We're on to Amendment 9. Senator Schauer.
Move Amendment number 9, A.9, Mr. Chair.
A.9. I will go ahead and object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. What we've discussed a lot about, trying to give the board some teeth, the ability to have a little more influence in the process. We've heard public testimony that often the testimony or the input from the board is ignored. So if you look at how we're wording this, the hope here was to essentially allow the Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities in conjunction with the board shall, without regard to political affiliation, solicit an interview and recruit the head of the division who shall report to and function at the direction of the board. So trying to basically make it so that it is still feasible to do, but that it's not where you have back to that political appointee under the commissioner who would, have the ability to just ignore it. So we're trying to strike a balance here that would allow the board to have that type of influence with the director. And there you go. So discussion's open, but this is what we came up with.
All righty. Senator Machicki.
Just curious what we do with the current director of the Marine Highway System. I don't know if that's a question to ask of Department of Transportation. We currently have someone in a very similar position. Senator Schauer, I'm not sure what you're... Well, maybe we can ask the department that question. And
so, Mr. Carpenter, I believe the question is how you got your job. Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies if I misstated that, but yes.
Through the chair, Rob Carpenter, DOT, Deputy Commissioner. So this is an interesting amendment, and we were talking about it internally. You know, I would say that the actual director of the Marine Highway System is Captain John Falvey. He's the he's the general manager and runs the entire system. As far as who's above him, that would be me, and I'm in the commissioner's office. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're having internal discussions on a position that could and would reside in the commissioner's office. That would work with the board, that would report to the commissioner's office and work collectively with the board. I'm a little concerned about the language where it's report to and function at the direction of the board. When Marine Highway is still technically within the purview of the Department of Transportation and the commissioner's office. So I'm not sure how this would work entirely. My vision is, if you will, is a board with a commissioner designee on the board and a position similar to this that wouldn't necessarily report to the board, but would work in conjunction with the board and the commissioner's office to provide the information necessary for the board to make decisions. So I'm not sure if that answers the question or not, but I know we have a little concern on this. On how it actually functioned.
So, Mr. Carpenter, I think the question was more, how is Captain Falvey currently appointed?
Sure. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. He's an exempt position. He would operate at the discretion of the commissioner's office and get confirmation from the governor's office.
Understood. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess maybe a historical frustration. I mean, note. Generally speaking, in the past, Captain Falvey's position has not been the one described in this language. And the language in the bill from the governor is almost identical, if not identical, to the language in the current MTAB statute. It's been a deputy commissioner. It's been a division director. It's been an executive director of the Marine Highway System. But I can count the number of times that the MTAB has been consulted on that hire. Since it was formed under Governor Murkowski, on one governor, Governor Murkowski. So the historical use of this board has been lacking. And I think, you know, we've all recognized that we need some change. That's why we're doing this. So I love this language. I want this language. I tried three different ways to write this language. Ledge Legal kept giving me a hard no on a board hiring an executive branch employee like this. So if this language works, I'm there for it. Unfortunately, I have a funny feeling about what we're going to hear from law.
Before we go there, Mr. Chair. Senator Schauer?
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to, again, on the record, I want to put this out there. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter answered this exactly like I expected he would. And Rob, it wasn't a setup, but like you might think when I say that, that's my contention about how we got here, about the public testimony and other things through history that different commissioners, et cetera, and personalities, a cult of personality, may ignore the advice that got us here, and why I believe we are at the time where we have to pull this out and do something different. And it's that very kind of resistance to this where you go, well, yeah, but you're still working for the commissioner. And depending on who that is, we can still blow you off. And you're still basically listening to a board that gives some opinions and some advice that they can go, not going to do it. And so your answer is exactly why I believe we're at the point where we have to do something different. Because you may do the right thing, and that's great, and I believe that you're trying to. However, hope is not a plan. We're hoping that personalities will do the right thing. I think we're at the point we need a structure in place that's going to allow us to do the things that need to be done. And so it was written in a manner, to Senator Keel's point, that if I go back to Ledge Legal, everything is always no, and I have the paperwork sitting in front of me that says this. But as I pointed out before as well, we already are having, I believe, constitutional issues when you look at the fact that not every board that we have is actually under the authority of the governor and appointed. We do it with an entire branch of our government right now. So I don't believe the argument holds weight. I think this is how we've always done it, and the answer is we just don't want to change it. And so, Mr. Chairman, I, for what it's worth, I mean, this may or may not hold up to certain people's scrutiny, or it could be challenged. I understand that, but we're going down this path of the exact same answer that, you know, this is why I believe we have to do something a little different. So I can certainly read the Ledge legal opinion, but I said I don't think we need to circle back to that if you'd like.
All right. Would you like to get a would you like Ms. Whitty to weigh in, or
She is welcome to, but I have a Ledge legal opinion here, and it's not going to change from what Senator Keel said, and I anticipate her answer, but if you certainly want to, you can. I don't think we're going to get the answer today, as has been, you know, talked about previously. Might be wasting our time.
Okay. Further discussion on this one? All right. We'll go ahead. Ms. Whitty, if you had an opinion on Amendment 9, just make it quick, please.
Chairman Meyer, this is Rachel Whitty from the Department of Law. Again, if we could get back to the board on, to the committee on the answers to these questions, I was not prepared to respond to them here today, but I'm happy to get back.
Understood. Thank you very much. All right. Is there further discussion on Amendment 9? Nope. Okay. So I will go ahead and withdraw my objection on Amendment 9. Is there further objection? Senator Michiki.
Mr. Chairman, should we consider, I like the amendment, should we consider tabling it for the next meeting? I don't think we're moving the bill today to get an answer, or does the committee just choose to move forward?
Well, I believe you are correct that we will be coming back.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
A few others. Senator Schauer.
Very briefly to that, I mean, we made the point earlier that we are kind of worrying a little bit about what may happen. So there's a little bit of that here of, you know, we may pass this and then it gets challenged. That's the way it goes. Happens all the time. However, I do agree with Senator Michiki. I think if we can get some more opinions to have a little discussion, since they weren't prepared to answer this, even though I anticipate where it's going, I'm happy to do that to the next meeting.
Okay.
Just because more data is better. But I do believe we may have to rip the Band-Aid off at some point and just try, or we're not going to see the change. So for what it's worth, I will be happy to table Amendment number 9 for now for the following meeting.
All right. So we'll go ahead and table Amendment 9 then. Be picked up at a later date. So Amendment 10, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 10.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Amendment 10 does is require the board to submit all of its. You good?
Sorry, it's A.3.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's all.
Just I appreciate that.
Clerical.
Thank you.
Continue.
Require the board to submit all of its reports and recommendations to the legislature, as well as to the department and the governor.
All right. Any other discussion on this one? Nope. Okay. I will go ahead and remove my objection. Seeing no further objection, Amendment 10 passes. Moving on to Amendment number 11. Also, Senator Keel. Oh, this is A.4.
I was going to do it right this time. And I move Amendment 11, A.4.
All righty. And I will object for purposes of discussion.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment 11 requires the board to submit proposed budgets, operating and capital, for AMHS to that same list, to the governor, to the Senate Secretary, and the Chief Clerk. And it's as far as I could walk on giving them the authority to set this. The governor will propose the budget, right? The board will not ultimately have the power to propose the budget to the legislature. But we will have an opportunity to see what the board proposes and to evaluate that proposal against what the governor submits as we prepare the annual operating and capital budgets doing our constitutional duty. So that's the legislature's opportunity to get the board's best recommendation and consider it along with the other information we've got.
Okay. This is... just my own comment on this one, that this is one of the ones that I was thinking about earlier when we were discussing who is making the appointments for the board. since the governor is the one who creates the budget, it makes it interesting. I do note that it doesn't say that the governor has to follow this budget when he submits his budget to the legislature, but it does does bring up an interesting extra dynamic there when we're talking about who gets appointed to the board, and people appointed to the board are appointed by whom, I should say. So, is there any further discussion on this one?
Just a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Schauer.
Very briefly from whoever is appropriate to answer, and it may have been done by the sponsor if he wants to answer, is there any issues with timeline for budgetary other documents? In other words, are we putting an extra burden? Is this in line with what they would normally do just from a pragmatic technical perspective, I guess? Or is this a new requirement that's out of the order?
I'll go Senator Keel, and then I'll go to DOT.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I won't answer for DOT. I can tell you that departments are doing their heads-up budget meetings with OMB usually just a little bit after this. No sooner do you start a fiscal year than you start proposing your budget for the next. Getting it ready, getting it to the governor. Governor still has until, I believe it's December 15th, to submit. Mm-hmm. So this would be a little bit earlier than usually those heads-up meetings are held, in my experience.
Either Mr. Carpenter or Mr. Mills, if you'd like to weigh in on this one.
Yeah. Through the chair, Rob Carpenter, DOT. Mr. Chairman and Senator Keel, I'm not sure about the date. August 1 might be a little early as far as the process. We could at least consider, if I could get back to the committee on timing, September 1 might be a better date as far as rolling. I just worry that there's potentially a conflict or an overburden on budget development around August 1. It might be too early to get to that point. We could get back to possibly a better timing on this at a later committee hearing, or we can, however you'd like to proceed.
Understood. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to take the department's recommendation, and so if we could table Amendment 11.
Okay. We'll go ahead and table Amendment number 11. Senator Schauer, Amendment 12, A.13.
Mr. Chairman, in accordance with our discussions previously, I move Amendment 12.
Object for purposes of discussion. There we go.
As we discussed yesterday about this, moving this within your or for this committee is just basically some change language here. It says Department of Transportation Public Facilities shall provide to the board information necessary for the board to carry out its duties. So it's just basically requiring them to provide that information. So it goes from kind of a may or a not to you shall. That was that simple.
Understood. Further discussion? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Seeing no further, Amendment 12 passes. Okay. Oh, this will be mine. Okay. So Amendment 13, this is A.15. This one's mine. So I will move Amendment 13.
Object for purposes of discussion.
That was a little too fast. No. All right. So Amendment 13, what we're doing is, again, as an effort to help provide a little bit more teeth to the board, we are saying that as DOT develops its goes through its normal process of developing its comprehensive intermodal long-range transportation plan, that they will incorporate the long-term plan that is created by the new advisory board here. We don't want them to be creating plans and then have them kicked to the curb, as we've discussed in the past. That seems to be a long-running problem for the MTEB. So that's what we're aiming for here, is just make sure that it's listened to and incorporated. Any further discussion? Senator Machicki.
I understand your intent, Mr. Chairman, with amendment number 13. But we always, when we do these things, we always think of a relatively balanced board or a board that might have a Democrat-led House, a Republican Senate and whomever in the governor's seat. Things don't always work out that way. And if a governor has an 8-year term and you had two bodies that were led with very heavy coastal influence, you may wish you didn't pass this. There still should be checks and balances in the system, and I worry that this language is a little strong, shall incorporate the long-range plan. So I just want you to think about that. Sometimes the department, and I'm not a big fan of either of these guys, but sometimes the department is an additional check on a board that may go too far one way or the other. And I don't, the D or the R didn't matter in this case, or whether or not they're coastal folks. It's really forcing them to incorporate may not be the direction we want to go. That's just, I want to give the board as much teeth as possible. When they put out a really good product that has a very sound development plan and they understand the transitions that must take place and it may turn into an independent corporation through recommendations, generally when you have an effort like this, it will happen. If not, perhaps the plan shouldn't have been carried out in its entirety in the first place. So I'm just a little worried about the shall incorporate.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have much stronger language in the next amendment for the and so I of course prefer my extremely strong language from the next amendment, but I think this one gives the department still some discretion. I don't think shall incorporate means slavishly follow, but it does require serious consideration, and in some significant sense, some material adherence. So I'd be perfectly happy to move on to my giving the board the power to approve the STIP and its amendments. But as we're talking about this one, I think this is a little more deferential.
All right,
Chairman,
Senator Bachicki.
I hate to be accusational, but did you two like organize this before the meeting in any way, shape, or form?
The disgusting part is, no, we did not.
Mr. Chairman, I understand there's a little bit of wiggle room in this, and if you want to put some teeth, shall incorporate does not mean in its entirety. I understand the difference between the two amendments. So I there's a little bit more wiggle room in this one, and I think wiggle room is important in a board that's completely under, not tied to the costs and actual execution of a plan going forward. So I could support this amendment a little easier than the next one.
Doing what I can to help here. More like the trash compactor on Star Wars. Yes, exactly. All right. Is there further discussion on this amendment? All righty. I'm going to go ahead and maintain the amendment, Senator Schauer, since it's technically your objection right now.
I'll remove my objection to this amendment based on that previous discussion.
Okay. All right. Any further objection? Seeing none. All right. We'll pass Amendment 13. Then we'll have Amendment 14, which is A.1. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given our past discussion, clearly in the future I need to take up collusion, but at this time I will withdraw Amendment 14.
All right. Amendment 14 has been withdrawn. Okay. Looks like I got one last enlist here. Oh, this is a pretty short one, so we'll go ahead and try to take care of this one before we take off out of here today. So this one is Amendment Number 15. It is A.14 from Senator Schauer.
I will admit, Mr. Chairman, I feel a little left out in the conversation here between you two with the collusion factor, but that's okay. I move Amendment Number 15.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Very simple one, as you said here. Should be pretty quick. Basically, this is just not knowing when this may pass or if it passes so that we don't offset the timing of the first report. So this basically just says, hey, once this passes, you got 90 days and give us the report. So pretty simple moving forward.
All righty. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, I'll go ahead and remove my objection on this one. Hearing no further objection, Amendment 15 passes. All right, so if I did my math right, we've got two amendments that we tabled. We'll hold those for later. Hopefully get a couple of quick answers, a couple of short answers back from Department of Law at some point. So given the time, that will conclude our meeting for today. The next meeting is going to be Tuesday, April 13th. We're going to be hearing HB 36 from motor vehicle dealers, applications, and insurance. And we'll be in discussions with the committee about bringing those amendments and waiting for some answers before we bring some those amendments back up and finish up with SB 103. With that, unless there are any closing comments, we will be adjourned at 3 o'clock on the dot. Thank you.